Are you in a contentious divorce looking for help, resources to help you and your children get through? Episode 128 of the Divorce Resource Guy podcast starts right now.
Welcome to the Divorce Resource Guy podcast with Jason Lavoie, aka the Divorce Resource Guy, a former divorce attorney turned divorce coach, talking about all things divorce, including the good, bad, and the ugly from an attorney's point of view. Remember, you're not alone. And now your host, Jason Lavoie.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 128 of the Divorce Resource Guy podcast. I am your host, Jason Lavoie, aka the Divorce Resource Guy. And today we have not one, but two great guests for you to learn from. One is a former family court, superior court judge, and the other is not only his spouse, but a registered nurse, board certified in psychiatric and mental health nursing. So let's get right to it. The Honorable Lawrence Jones and his wife, Joni Jones. He likes to be called Larry, so I will call him Larry. And Joni is Joni. They are a caring and dynamic couple who have dedicated their lives and professional outreach to helping families navigate the oft-times difficult journey through mental health issues, special needs, and family law. After serving on the Superior Court bench in New Jersey, Larry retired from public service, began teaching at two universities, became significantly involved in mediation and alternative dispute resolution. His wife, Joni, is board certified in psychiatric and mental health nursing, and she is a certified anger management specialist. She's also a mediator as well. Both of them have a wealth of experience, and that's why I had them on the podcast. So without further ado, we're going to talk about one of their projects called Point C. So let's get right into it. I think you're really going to enjoy it and learn a lot. So here we go. Larry and Joni, welcome to the show. How are you guys today?
Very good. Very good. Thank you for having us here today, Jason.
Thank you, Jason.
I'm excited. I feel like I was out at the store or something and I had a special coupon. I get two for one.
Well, it is holiday season, you know.
That's right. It's coming up. Although by the time this is published, it'll probably be after the holidays.
That's true.
But that's right. It's like Black Friday special here. So the first, for people who aren't familiar with you guys, I want you to give a brief overview of kind of your background, briefly, and the path that you've kind of taken to get to where you are today and how we're talking to each other.
Sure. Joni, I'll go first. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we lived in New Jersey for many years and now live out in New Mexico. We're residents of New Mexico now, but still have strong ties in New Jersey. I was a Superior Court judge in the family part in New Jersey for many years, retired from the bench in 2017. Following that, I did a lot of mediation in family court in New Jersey and taught at a few universities. And I'm teaching now out at the University of New Mexico presently. Before I was a judge, I was a lawyer, primarily family court lawyer for many years as well. Joni?
My name is Joni Jones. I'm a registered nurse by profession over 45 years. I am board certified in mental health and psychiatric nursing. I also am a certified anger management specialist. I worked on a mental health unit for over 10 years. I sat on a lot of governmental task force. I'm a mediator, and I also have been a guardian ad litem to judges with children with developmental disabilities.
Wow. So you really haven't done a lot of things.
Joni didn't mention she was also the New Jersey Golden Gloves Boxing Official of the Year back in 2009.
That's true.
Is that true?
She really was.
Oh, yes. Wow. That's so funny. That's really great. You guys have a collective body of experience that is going to be great for our listeners to learn something from. And for today, we're here to talk about your project called Point C. Let's get right into it. And just, for people who aren't familiar with Point C, and obviously we want them to be, if they're listening to this and they're going through divorce or about to, or in any fashion dealing with divorce, what is Point C and how did you come up with that name?
Okay, well, Point C is a free public educational service really available for parents and professionals who find themselves going through contentious divorces, or if they have friends or family members, loved ones, et cetera, who are in that situation. Point C started as a video, which when I was on the bench, I was on the faculty at New Jersey Judicial College. That's something where judges are required to go once a year for educational updates, so to speak. And it's usually the week of Thanksgiving, the Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So I was on the faculty. And, you know, I wanted to try to create something that was going to be different and interesting for the judges in attendance, because all the judges from the state, they call it a plenary, the family court judges would gather there. So we created Point C, and Point C was essentially a 5-minute video, kind of a video fable, similar to Aesop's Fables, but in video form, which had a teaching lesson to it. And it really was about contentious divorces and what happens to a child often in a contentious divorce through the unintentional, but nonetheless, sometimes reckless actions of both parents sometimes. You know, you always hear that children, the children's best interest is supposed to be at the focal point of litigation, but yet sometimes litigation itself can be contrary to a child's best interest, and the parents sometimes are on automatic pilot and they're fighting with each other. Meanwhile, the child is suffering emotionally and mentally and otherwise. So that's what Point C was designed to be, a 5-minute video. It got a tremendous amount of positive response at Judicial College from my fellow family court judges. And there was a movement on at the time by many there to try to actually make Point C part of the mandatory parent education training for parents in New Jersey. And for those who are unfamiliar with the court system, there's a lot of administrative red tape that gets involved with kind of creating new things. So it never really got to that point. And then once I retired, Jenny and I decided, well, we should still put this out there for the public because there's a value to it, an educational value, and to make it free. In other words, nothing was being charged. So we had that out there. We created just earlier this year a website, which is also free with a lot of additional educational materials on there. And it's really designed to be an assistive tool for not only parents, but for professionals, keeping in mind you're really driving towards protecting the best interests of a child rather than destroying it. Johnny?
And Jason, I'd like to add that this video impacts everybody differently. It sends a very strong message, but it's really unique to the responses of the viewer. Everybody has their own frame of reference. What I like about it is that it actually makes a person stop and think, and it allows them to reset. And the way that I look at it, it's getting from that emotional side of the brain into the logical side of the brain. And the example that I can give is that it starts out with a child that had the greatest mom and dad. They had an intact family. Now the family's no longer going to be intact. And the parents are so many times just on autopilot that they don't even realize what's happening to the children in the midst of all this. But it takes you on a very powerful journey. And if you were going to ask me what is the overall message of Point C, it's what you shouldn't do during a divorce.
I love that. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did Point C, the name, kind of derive from Point A being, you know, mom side, Point B, dad side in a stereotypical divorce setting, and then Point C is what people should gravitate to because you don't want one the other, you want something, an alternative, a better alternative.
Well, yes, in part, but, you know, and like Joni was alluding to, actually after we released it, a lot of mediators started using it and attorneys started using it, and on high conflict cases and getting back to us and saying, you know, that it was extremely helpful in terms of breaking the stalemate, not in every case, but in many. And that they had very different, people had very different interpretations and messages from what they took out of Point C. Just like three people could read a book or watch a movie and get a different message out of it. Point C, yes, Point C was, you know, Point A is the in this hypothetical, the father's unshakable positions, and Point B was the mother's unshakable positions, and Point C could be somewhere, some third point in the middle, where if they're really working to the child's best interest, it helps the child, and it doesn't have to be necessarily Point A or Point B. However, When you watch the story in the video, it's also that what point C becomes changes radically. In the beginning, it's, well, this could be a happy place, or at least a peaceful place where you avoid litigation, end litigation, and just through compromise and flexibility, even though you're getting divorced, work to achieve something together as parents, even though you're divorced parents, that helps your child emotionally. By the end, point C is something radically different. I won't give away the ending or anything like that, but you know, if you watch the movie, if you watch the film, it becomes very obvious what point C became versus what it could have become. It is a different position, but not anything that's really going to be helpful to the parents as far as that's concerned.
Before we forget, and I definitely don't want to forget, where can people watch the video?
Well, it's online. First of all, it's on our website, which is www.pointcdivorce.com. And it's if you type that in, it'll come right up there. So the video's there. It's also on YouTube, and it's also on, you know, a host of different organizational sites have the links on it. The AFCC started supporting it, and APFM started supporting it, Our Family Wizard. So it's really, if you just type in a point C divorce, let's say Jones, it's going to come up in a multitude of different places.
That's excellent. And of course, I'll put that information in the show notes too for people who can't look at it this second. But I definitely encourage everybody listening to watch the video. It's not long. It's catchy. It's entertaining. But it's more importantly, it's substantive and will get you thinking, hopefully. I want to talk just for a second, because as an attorney who practiced here in New Jersey, and you know that the standard when you're in a divorce, when you're talking about children, is what's the best interest of the children. And a lot of states have that standard. Some states call it something different, but it's about, you know, the message and the intent is the same, I would say. Why is it, in your opinion, that in a contested divorce, when minor children are involved, it's so difficult for the parents to, while they may think they're acting in the best interest of their children, they're really not. And that's what causes a lot of the conflict. And then they use them, of course, as weapons or pawns and to manipulate, and it gets out of control. And rather than agreeing, you know, on a parenting schedule and custody that involves both parents, you know, abuse aside, that's something else, of course. But like when you're not dealing with domestic violence or anything like that, why is it so difficult? You know, I've experienced it. You've experienced it. I know as a judge, the parents just get, it's like they go down the rabbit hole. And I never really understood why. Is it just the emotions getting out of control?
I think based on my experience on the bench and before being appointed to the bench as an attorney, practicing for many years, and then afterwards as a mediator, I think for the most part, and there are always some exceptions, but for the most part, both parents going through a divorce honestly believe they are acting in the best interest of their child, and also honestly believe in a contentious divorce that their ex-spouse is the problem. It's not them, it's the ex. And right. You never met anyone like my ex, et cetera, you know. And so sometimes, and that's not in every case, but we talk about the highly contentious cases, you know, the ones where they can't agree on whether the sun is up in the morning, you know, no matter what one side says, the other one's fighting it. And there are many reasons for that. People, when they come into a contentious divorce, very often the marriage ended very tragically in one way or another. One side or the other feels they were betrayed, that they were left, that they were cheated on, that whatever. And so when people come into a contentious divorce and they're not yet ready to even talk to the other side, it's like they're bringing their whole history with them like a bag of rocks into the litigation. And so when you're starting off like that and you don't have any end game in sight other than I want everything and the other side needs to be punished for what happened, even though it's a no-fault divorce, you're starting right off on the wrong path. Then on top of it, some attorneys are great at helping forge a peace and helping negotiate a settlement, and others, quite frankly, and I'm not disparaging the profession I've been in for decades, but some attorneys are not that skilled at that. They're just not. And all they're doing is kind of feeding the fire. Banding at writing nasty typewritten insults about each other and certifications, sending giant affidavits and all kinds of documents attached on things that really are not going to make a hill of beans of difference in the outcome of the case. We always say, Johnny and I talk about this sometimes, that, you know, it's like when you get in a car, if you know where you want to get, you know, you put the address in the GPS and then it kind of backwards tells you how to get there. When you think about that with a divorce, if you're starting off in a divorce and your goal is really to get to a point where you get your divorce done without a lot of emotional trauma, without unnecessary expense and time, and you're keeping peace for the child because you have to deal with your ex in one form or another. If you have a minor child after the fact, usually that it makes some sense to start off in your conversations with your attorney right at the very beginning on how to accomplish that, to have a plan. Now, that doesn't mean the other side is going to be willing to do that, but at least you're starting with a plan rather than just reacting to everything that's being thrown your way. Johnny?
Yes, Jason, I'm going to tell you physiologically what happens. So in a contentious divorce, our emotions run high and we have adrenal glands that have a response. These are our flight, fight, or freeze mechanism that a lot of people know. It's a protective mechanism for us. And what happens is once we start to have these hormonal responses, some people may know that we have physical responses, like, you know, maybe our heart rate goes up, our breathing goes up, our blood pressure goes up, and some people can even go into a panic attack. But when these hormone surges get into a certain level, it actually affects the way that we think. So we have a right side of the brain that is very, very impulsive. It's very reactionary. And it goes off of the what ifs. There's no logical thinking here. So it's very hard to come to decision making. And what happens is a lot of people get stuck in this. And they're really not listening. They're going on and on and on, and people don't realize what's happening. Well, what we really have to do is work on things to get them into the left side of the brain where there is logical thinking. It is not impulsive. It is the ability to listen. It's not going off of the what ifs, but this is where decision making can take place. So this is why we see a lot of these hangups. And what I always like to say is that we are not born with knowledge. We are born with the ability to learn. But if we have never been shown something, then we're not going to know about it. And this is why we had developed not only the point C, because I think very easily it goes from that emotional side of the brain, and then it's like on that reset, it's crossing that bridge over. But we have the skill building component to it, because if you don't have the skill building, how are you going to know how to manage it or how to stay in that side of the brain?
Talk to me a little bit about the skill building component, because you bring up such a great point. And you know, it's one of those things that as a practicing attorney, whether it was my client or my adversary or their client, and sometimes it was both. But how do you, you know, when you go to court for a motion hearing or something else, you know, it's very regimented. You know, the court docket is packed, and you know, there's business to be done and not much room for other things. And that's just the nature of the beast. So the judge hears a case, tries to stay on track, makes a ruling, move on. And lawyers are busy too, and they I think tend to take a similar approach. But when there's no real mechanism in place when you're litigating to address what you just are talking about, the emotional responses people are dealing with, other than if somebody's in personal therapy, which you can't force them to do, although sometimes I force my clients to be in therapy if they wanted me as their lawyer. But is that one of the things, is that the only way, other than point C, which the skill building you're talking talk about now, but is that the only other way before point C to for some people to kind of address those issues?
Well, there's two things that I usually bring up. And one of them is called heartfelt forgiveness. This is a very emotional time, and people know the traditional definition of forgiveness. And that is usually when you have a relationship with somebody, maybe they did something wrong and you're going to like minimize something or make a compromise because you're going to have a continued relationship with them. And, you know, then you move on. But heartfelt forgiveness is something very different. It's very conscious decision-making process. So for example, if we had a family that let's say their child was murdered, and then they go into their court hearing and we hear the family stand before them and they say, "I forgive you." They are not saying that they forgive them because what they did was right. They're not saying that they forgive them because they want to have a relationship with them. They are consciously forgiving them because they want to be released from that torment, that emotional prison. So when somebody can understand what heartfelt forgiveness is, make that conscious decision because they don't want to be for the rest of their life in prison with these emotional traumas that impact their life and take their own joy. That's one thing. The other thing that I usually recommend, it's called effective listening. And with effective listening, it's a very simple tool. When you're in a court setting, I usually recommend taking a piece of paper, a writing utensil, because when you hear somebody else speak, and remember, if a judge is going to make a decision, they're looking at you, right? So credibility becomes very important. So when somebody's speaking and you're getting triggered, instead of making these faces or huffing and puffing or stop listening to what else is being said, just the act of going to that pen and paper and writing it down and jotting it down keeps you out of that emotional side of the brain. It stops those little facial gestures that can be misinterpreted. And it allows you to make a little jot that you can come back and say what you want to say instead of perseverating, thinking over and over again on a thought that's very important to you and not continue the listening process. So with just those two little tools, practicing a little bit and being aware of that, those are two pretty important, you know, tools that can help you through this process.
Also, sometimes, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I just wanted to jump on that just because that's a huge nugget of gold. I think you gave everybody there, Joni. And, you know, as you were saying that, you know, bring a pad and paper, take notes. If you need to, as an attorney, I'm thinking, you know, my client, this is what I would do all the time. If you need to talk to me rather than lean over and whisper and interrupt, you know, if the judge is talking and, you know, they might hear you with the acoustics and everything, write it down and pass me a note and we can communicate that way. But that is such a huge thing to do for the reasons you just said, not just for the mechanics of taking notes, but it disengages them from doing all the things that you don't want them to do that could be interpreted and impinge on their credibility. And because I hear attorneys would say all the time, right? And I would do it too, in addition to giving the pen and pad, but don't make any facial expressions. You know, I don't care what the judge tells you, do not grimace, huff, make any noises. But, you know, in the moment, it goes in one ear, out the other. So that's why what you said is so important, is because it disengages from that behavior. Sorry, Larry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that following up on that the importance of having these types of conversations with your attorney up front at the very beginning of the case is critical. And sometimes that doesn't happen. I mean, it's obvious to me sometimes when someone comes into court with their attorney, who have prepared and who have not. It's just obvious. And sometimes, you know, an attorney sends an associate or whatever, and that happens sometimes, but when you're going through a contentious divorce and a party to that divorce is meeting the substitute attorney for the first time in the hallway or in the parking lot, that's not adequate preparation, no matter how good that attorney may be. If you think about it, these conversations about, well, don't make any facial expressions, et cetera. Those are things you might have a discussion about after a case has been going on for a long time when you're in court, because you're usually not in court until the case has been pending for some period of time. There are many people who go through a divorce and are never in court except for perhaps their uncontested settlement, where there's no fight at all. And sometimes those are not the most, sometimes those cases are actually even more complicated than some of the other ones that go on forever, but the parties can deal with each other in a mutually respectful manner and not be just mutual parties to a sea of dysfunction, blaming each other for everything. So for example, it always seemed to me that it made sense if an attorney is getting involved in a contentious case to have a confidential face-to-face meeting with the client up front about what that client is really expecting at the end of the divorce. What are they looking for? What's most important for them? And I don't mean general terms like I want justice, I want fairness. No, I mean specifics. In other words, if you were going to put together your own settlement agreement, what would it say as long as it was fair to both sides? And sometimes, like when I was in practice, before I was a judge, when I was an attorney, I would actually give the clients homework and I'd want them to do it in writing. So they took the time to think about it. And so I, as the attorney, would be able to review it and think about, well, is what they're asking for logical or not? Can you really get it? Or is it a pie in the sky dream? And then you start figuring out what's most important to them and you have these ongoing discussions. So the attorney and client are on the same page, hopefully, throughout the process, and you can plan how you can best get to the most important things that the person wants. If somebody says, I want everything, I want 100% of all the assets, and by the way, I want custody, and the ex is only allowed to have the parenting time once a year, on their birthday or something like that. Well, that's unreasonable in most cases. And if the client doesn't know that that's unreasonable up front and they're just drifting along, their expectations are unrealistic, and then they're going to be disappointed at the end. And then they start shopping for a new attorney. Sometimes I got five attorneys by the time the case is over, because some attorneys won't have that conversation or just don't have that conversation until the day before trial or something like that. And it's a missed opportunity. So planning ahead makes it very important.
Or worse, some attorneys will yes them to death, saying even their unreasonable demands, yeah, I think that's reasonable, and we're gonna ask for that, and that's what we're gonna get for you, just to get the client. And of course,
Listen, there are different. There are a million attorneys out there, and some have different skill sets than others. I'm just saying that in general, from a client standpoint, you hear these cases all the time. A client hasn't spoken with their own attorney in 4 months, and they're going through a divorce, and like, why is that? And they're waiting for the attorney to call them, but it doesn't necessarily work that way. Sometimes you have to ask for updated appointments to go in, and you can do that on Zoom these days, that type of thing. So you don't have to necessarily drive to the attorney's office, just to make sure that you know what's going on in your own case, in your own life, that you're not a spectator or bystander in your own life. And then when I would get cases sometimes, and I had to decide many custody trials, many custody and parenting time issues, and I could just tell you right off the bat, Jason, that when somebody was asking for custody and someone was asking for parenting time, I'm only talking about me, not any other judge. But when I saw that their papers were filled with nothing but insults about the other side and how terrible the other side was, that was a huge turnoff for me. What I was looking for and what scored points is, could the other person in a respectful manner, even if the other side wasn't too nice to them during their marriage or did some bad things, are they constructively indicating how, for the child's sake, in writing, they're planning to for everyone to move forward so that the child could have a relationship, if as long as there isn't safety issues involved or anything like that, with both parents, and how the parents after the divorce can rise above the ashes of their failed marriage and still work together to the extent necessary as shared parents. The parties who were able to do that definitely had a leg up on the parties who just may have felt better by trashing their ex in typewritten sentences about all the things they did wrong 17 years ago. And so, now other judges may have looked at it a different way, but that was significant to me because to be a good parent for the child's sake, for the best interest of the child, you have to be able to, in many cases, rise above whatever the ex's flaws were that drove you to the divorce and still work with them, just like you sometimes have to work with a co-employee who you don't really like that much. Now, as you said, if there's domestic violence or something, or abuse, that's a different story. But in the majority of cases, you would get these insults even if there was no history of domestic violence.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, there's a lot of things that you threw in there that were all 100%, in my opinion, accurate and right. But the theme of this, I think for most people, because a lot of the people that I work with as a coach, I can't tell you how often I hear they have attorneys, but they have no idea what's going on. They're afraid to talk with their attorney for one of many reasons. And that's it. You got to know what your strategy is. Do you have a strategy? Have a plan. Be proactive, not reactive. And most importantly, I think the key to success, especially in front of a court, is separating the emotional baggage out from the business at hand. And I think that's what the attorney's job is to, when you're drafting a certification on behalf of your client, you know, the tone is everything. And I would spend a lot of time to make sure the tone was what I wanted it to be, and not just one big, you know, insult fest. Because that, like you said, that doesn't help you make a decision as a judge.
And Jason, I just wanted to add to that. How many times do we hear best interest of the child, best interest of the child? But who really gets into what is the best interest of the child? Because if we're looking at the Point C video, and this is one of the things that we also have on our skill building, is you see at the end a balloon and the child in the balloon, and then it's released. Well, think about that. When you have a balloon and it is released, where does it go? Where does it land? Yeah. Does it pop? We don't know those things. And one of the things that we talk about is that every child is different and they respond differently. And, you know, if it's the first time that they're in this situation, it is so unpredictable that we really don't know how they are going to respond. And changes can result, they can become, you know, confused, anxious, fearful, all those things. But some children blame themselves and they say, what did I do wrong? Sure. And then we look at guilt and we look at shame. And I'm not sure if everybody really knows the difference. So guilt is when somebody feels they did something wrong. Shame is when they feel like they are the something wrong. And that is when we get into the mental health component of it. And, you know, if there is a contentious divorce, the more contentious it is, then there's more of that risk of that lack of security, that lack of trust. And, you know, they have nowhere to go and they have these sleep disturbances, or they can have even what's called somatic responses. And somatic responses are physical responses. People can throw up, they can get headaches, they can get really sick, but they're actually caused from the underlying anxiety. And they are treated by that. Some of it goes into like really a trauma response. And then we can see mental health crisis. Now, some people don't even realize, and they may be shocked to know how many 10-year-olds have attempted to take their own lives or even succeeded at the task of taking their own life in the United States. So we look at some of those self-injurious behaviors or some risky behaviors, and then it really depends on the age group. So different things happen. And you may have, I always say, look for a change in the behavior, because some might respond very aggressively and others might withdraw. There might be changes in school performances, or they might have their extra activities. But when we look at the self-esteem issues, some of them might engage in risky behaviors themselves. We might see some people going to unhealthy relationships. joining some gangs and things of that nature, and because they want to be accepted. Then we might see some starting to smoke, some going into drugs. If they have that alcoholic gene and they're drinking, we see alcoholism. These are real life things. And then one of the things that when they got older was what I saw when I worked on the mental health unit is that people became confused with the act of intimacy and love. So if the act of intimacy felt good, they thought that was love. And then the other thing is just the full circle. If you have a child that's growing up and they're having their own family and they're having resentment to you, it might come full circle and they may not want you to be around your own grandchildren. So we have to think of that full circle also.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great point.
Children, but I would interview children in they call it in camera, outside of the presence of the parents. You know, I'd interview children a lot. You know, very often, sometimes one or both parents were pushing. They wanted the child to be interviewed because they thought the child was going to go in and say all these great things about them and terrible things about the other parent, because that's what maybe they were forced to say when they were talking to one parent and the other in their kitchen. And then when they got into the interview, many, many times the children, notwithstanding what the parents thought the children were going to say, they had resentment towards both parents, both for putting them into this situation, for making them kind of have to choose in one fashion or another. And the older children in particular, the high schoolers and even the junior high schoolers, very often they were extremely aware of how much money this was costing the family, money that could have been spent on them.
Yeah.
And they would say this. And, you know, the divorce rate is what, 50%. So half of their friends are also going through a divorce or been through a divorce. They're all exchanging horror stories in the cafeteria about their dysfunctional parents. And so sometimes when the parents, after spending all this money and time fighting with each other, hear what the child actually was thinking and feeling and saying about both of them, sometimes it facilitated a settlement, actually, but it was very unfortunate because it could have happened months or sometimes years earlier. They could have saved a lot of money for their child's college education or a car or prom or whatever, and they just threw it all away. And that's kind of like what you see in point C.
Yeah, it's very sad to see that. I hated doing that when I practiced, and that was one of the catalysts for me quitting the practice of family law and deciding to become a coach, to be honest with you. Well, guys, this was nothing but great. I could talk to you for another hour easy, but we're out of time for today. Perhaps I'll have you on again. Thank you for bringing Point C to the attention of all the listeners. And I encourage all the listeners to go look it up, check out the video and everything else that there is to offer. And thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having us, Jason. And thank you to the Garden State, our roots. You know?
And thank you, Jason, for all that you do for our community.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you, guys.
All right. I told you they would be great guests. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned a lot. Check them out at Point C. You could reach them. The website is Point C, the letter C, pointcdivorce.com. So check them out. I think it's really great what they're doing. And you heard it from the proverbial horse's mouth in Larry's, you know, he's a former Superior Court Family Court judge here in New Jersey, so he knows what he's doing. He's dealt with it firsthand. You can't get a better source than that. So if you're looking for help with your divorce, look no further. Contact me, and I can give you information about my divorce coaching services. I'm all about empowering you with the information you need to know so you can make the best decisions moving forward. My email, jason@jasonlavoie.com. My website, jasonlavoie.com. And if you haven't subscribed to the podcast and get all new episodes when they come out, it's a great free resource for you to learn from industry experts just like Larry and Joni. In the meantime, all I'm going to ask you to do is be strong, act confident, and stay positive. I'm Jason Lavoie, aka The Divorce Resource Guy, and I'll be seeing you real soon.